This is AgriPulse Open Mic. I'm your host, Jeff Nally. Our guest this week is Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. AgriPulse Open Mic continues with NASDA's Ted McKinney next. Today's Open Mic segment is brought to you by America's crop insurance industry, which is thankful for the continued support of farmers, commodity organizations, rural businesses, lenders, and lawmakers who are fighting to maintain a strong farm safety net, providing individualized protection on more than 490 million acres of farmland. Crop insurance remains the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. This is AgriPulse Open Mic. Fresh off a very successful NASDA annual meeting in Wyoming, CEO Ted McKinney says the focus of state ag department leaders turns again to Washington for future ag policy. McKinney has an extensive career in public service and says an atmosphere clouded with gridlock and threats of shutdown is a challenging environment to develop successful policy.
Shutdowns or long delays in Farm Bill, you can put them in the same category because it means we're just not timely in our policy decision making. It doesn't win for anybody. It does not. And I think most would say that. And I'm not saying that as a political statement. It's just neither side wins. So you hope that you can get decisions made in a timely manner. Now, I could take either side of that argument and make a pretty good case. I can make the case for staying open, keep going, funding, and all that. But then, and that would get things done. That would get things done. But at a time when so much money has been spent the last 3 years, and we've added so much to our kids and our grandkids' debt, I can easily make the point on the other side that you got to ask the question, when does this stop? When do we turn off the spigot? And unfortunately, the Farm Bill comes along at the first great opportunity for the House, which is now under Republican leadership, to try to do something about the budget. So it's just the damnedest thing. I'll just tell you that a continuation, though it keeps doors open and keeps things going, is no answer either, because having been in the administration when this happened once, you just shut things down, and as long as you don't have a new bill, you are you're not allowed to plan for the future. You know, you can keep going on things that have already been appropriated, but if you're just a continuing resolution and you don't appropriate new money, you can't plan for that to international travel that you need to do. We can't plan our market access program fund, which is the same case for all of our commodity groups that do work internationally. So even a continuing resolution is not ideal.
There will have to be a proposal from both chambers. Mr. McCarthy, the speaker, suggested in the basement of the Capitol that he would see that possible being done this year. Ms. Stabenow suggested that she thought the Senate would take the lead, and her target and timeline was toward December. Who leads, and does it matter, do you think, to the bottom line before we get to the conference committee?
You know, egos would suggest that the House should lead because they have the purse. But golly, for those of us in ag, it doesn't matter, I think, to our members who leads, as long as it gets done and it gets done well. The parameters that we've continued to assert on with Farm Bill is that we keep it unified. Yes, there's some dogfights out there between the traditional farm-oriented program versus the nutrition programs, but we've got to keep them together because though some call it a holy alliance and some call it an unholy alliance, it allows both sides to come together. And let's not forget, most people think the 2018 and the 2014 farm bills were really good and appropriate times. So you can come out with wins despite these dichotomies. So that's the first thing that we think we've got to do. The wild card is there are so many things that we need to upgrade and improve in the farm bill, all at a time when there's not an appetite to spend more money. And this is the problem with spending so doggone much money outside of a normal farm bill. Now, I'll be careful here. I am an advocate for the funding that was provided for the Climate Smart Agricultural projects. I think those probably have some great merit over the long term. But by doing it outside of the farm bill, you kind of really screw up the whole formula, because there's a conservation title in the farm bill. So does it get rolled in? Does it not? Was that a one-off? All the questions come. So I think that the maturity that I'm seeing, and I do mean that in a complimentary way, the maturity I'm seeing with the chair of the House Ag Committee and his ranking member, and I think even in the Senate, Senator Stabenow and Senator Boozman have a good relationship. I think we will find a way to come together. I don't know the timing. I can't predict how long there'll be a shutdown or if there will be a shutdown. I keep saying first quarter next year. That's just kind of a stab in the dark. But I'm not hopeless on the possibility of losing the farm bill, because we know that Senator Stabenow is departing at the end of next year. This is very important to her. We know that the chair of the House Ag Committee also very interested in getting it done. Across all of Congress, this is the biggest piece of legislation out there. It touches so many people, farm and rural versus urban alike. So I still remain optimistic that it'll get done, but it will not be September 30. And may not even be this year. Now, I hope I'm wrong, Jeff. I hope I'm wrong. I hope it's this year.
I saw some of the action items that came out of your meeting, and I noticed that one of those was support for local and regional food processing. That's something that came up during COVID, and I think we're finding a consumer today that wants to know more and more about where their food comes from, and they like the idea of it coming from a local source. How can the farm bill help here, and does it carry a big price tag?
Well, frankly, there's already been a fair amount of monies expended, largely last year, for expansion of food processing. And I think there's some monies, I can't remember if it's the IRA bill or something else, that offers support there. So I think a lot of that's already done, and it just needs to be expended per the appropriation already made. It might be rolled into the farm bill, but since it's already been expended, more than likely, the farm bill will stay focused on larger, I would say, and more critical things. Things like, do we have the adequate amount of insurance? Are the reference prices correct? We're still very strong on research. Good night for the last two farm bills. Research generally has been 11 out of 10, maybe 6 out of 5. And always the bridesmaid, never the bride. And we can't do that. We're turning away students at universities because they got better labs and better facilities at the engineering. So we've got to rededicate ourselves to research. And I'll say the same for the market access program funds. Ag has always been about trade, and there's some frustration out there that we're not getting after some market access opportunities. So those are the things that we focused on more. But that said, our states, both Democrat and Republican, are pretty happy with those modest funds for processing. And by the way, it's not for the same reason. Our members get a little disturbed when they read about this concentration business that's being accused. They don't see that or feel that quite as much as perhaps the administration does. That said, they also see the value of a little more processing. Take a mid to small size processor, let them add, 20%, 30% capacity, and it's the relief valve if something should go wrong, like it did in some cases with COVID. So on one hand, they love it, but it's for different reasons, I think, than the administration had been advocating for a while there.
Ted, you mentioned waters of the U.S., so let's walk into that water now, if you will. The Biden administration obviously was aware of the Supreme Court Sackett decision, and many believe that the Biden administration would then rewrite the rule. Instead, the rule was amended. And this has always been about federal or state and who's in control and what land is covered under this water regulation. So how are the members of NASDA, how do they feel about this current plan of action? And is it adequate for clear and concise answers, or is the water still muddy that we're standing in?
Well, using your metaphor, it's still muddy. Our members, at minimum, are unhappy and on the verge of angry. For a long time, this has been a toy on overreach by the US EPA. We have not wanted to say it quite that directly. We've tried to play good team ball out of recognition that many Supreme Court decisions had already, over history, said waters are shared. And so from day one, even before the Supreme Court ruled, members, Democrats and Republicans alike, did not like the direction. And then when we were not consulted, they had the opportunity to call us. We invited it. We even did so through an op-ed in AgriPulse. And in all cases, we were completely ignored. So that's where I think our members would be on the verge of angry, because it clearly said, at least in the case of water, we don't care what you think. We've got our mind made up, and we're going to go do it. So now we're left with greater uncertainty, muddy waters, as you say, or if there's even water at all, because it's still unclear, and you're still going to have a farmer or rancher go retain some high-priced lawyer to help them figure out what is their situation. And we are not happy about that at all, and we could have helped resolve it, but did not get the chance. We don't have the same view about other aspects of EPA, but in the case of WOTUS, yeah, not very happy at all. And that transcends just about all our members, no matter their political stripes.
Ted, unless Congress comes up with legislation and that is approved, California's Proposition 12 becomes the regulation of the land for pork production for meat that will be sold in California. What precedents does this set with regard to a state having the control of production nationwide? Is this a Commerce Clause violation in NASDA's view, or what concerns you about this process?
Good question. I would say for most of our members, the view, the hope, the expectation was that the Supreme Court would rule against Proposition 12 because of the Commerce Clause. My goodness, when it comes to trading and movement and logistics of food and ag products, it's traversing across the U.S. All the time. So bottom line, it was a surprise. To your question, yes, this sets a very dangerous precedent. One of the things we have enjoyed is at least some level of alignment across the U.S. in terms of food. It's not perfect by any stretch, but by and large, what stood in one state could stand in another state. The fact that California did this, I must say, we respect our own California Department of Food and Ag. They are our member. They did not cause this. This was electorate vote. This is consumers of California doing this, and CDFA is just doing their best to implement this, and we must compliment them for trying so far to do this in a very fair and open way. In that sense, CDFA earns the respect of their peers. But I worry that because the precedent is so strong and because there is such anger about what it means, that we might start seeing a tit for tat. You know, some legislature decides, all right, if things are going to traverse out of California to my port in, say, Texas, we'll just impose a surcharge there or something of that type. I mean, I worry about where the next shoe might fall in this game of I'm better than you, or we care for animals better than you, or whatever the case might be that conflicts with the Commerce Clause. We're more than just a bit worried. We at NASDA are trying to keep a steady hand at the helm here. We do not want to get into a food fight as a U.S. It is not productive. So maybe there's a way that we can get the California Prop 12 type issue fixed, maybe there's a way for ballots across the country to have a little bit higher hurdle so that reason will prevail and they have more urban and rural votes, decision-making on what a ballot looks like, what's required to make a ballot go live. So we're in uncharted areas here, Jeff, and I'm just hoping we can avoid a food fight, but I worry for that first time when somebody finds that right opportunity to play gotcha and play pushback, because then we're off to the races with our food fight. Not productive.
With regard to workforce, can Washington tweak H-2A and H-2B and satisfy what agriculture needs?
They can. They can do that. And we thought we were close last year with the omnibus in getting the appropriate fixes specific to agriculture on workforce. So it is possible. Now, that said, it's difficult to extract that out and give either side a win when you have such flow of immigrants and illegals coming across the border to the south. And so one understands why at least the Republican side has made that stake their claim. And yet on all sides, agriculture across the board, no matter one's political affiliation, we're needing workers. So I think they can fix it, but we're not anticipating that in the near term, though we keep pressing and hoping for it. Where we're going, Jeff, is we believe we've got to look more inward. We're thrilled that National FFA is now reaching down to the fifth and sixth grade level to establish FFA and ag education programs. 4-H, I just spoke yesterday evening with the new head of the 4-H Council here in D.C., preparing these kids for careers in ag and keeping them in the fold, as it were, is something that we believe can help address that. It's not a total fix, but it can help address that, and we've got to make sure it's known that there are still a lot of wonderful opportunities for a career in agriculture, from soup to nuts, alpha to omega, 1 to Z, A to Z, all of that. We think there's an opportunity. We're focusing internally as well as externally.
With regard to action items, there were two of those that dealt with what's in a label. One of those, plant-based items that might be labeled as a dairy good, and also food from cultured cells. What did your members say about that? What do they hope to see from Washington, from FDA?
Sure. Well, the interesting thing is our members do believe in innovation. So the discussion did not lend itself toward stopping new and different products, plant-based milk or plant-based other things. They embrace all innovation. That said, they also believe that it's right and proper to label them appropriately. Well, if FDA has labeled milk and it comes from a lactating cow, then it's easy and appropriate to say that that does not fit a plant that might be providing it. So we're not against any of these. In fact, among our very, very good friends are those in the almond industry who have a good product in almond milk. But we also happily would say to them, look, you know, if you've got such good brand, find the right language other than that which we've always associated as coming from a lactating cow. And so that's where I think they came down. Just let's be honest with the labels, honest with our science, and then the rest will come and fall in place naturally.
Well, while you were still in government in your last round of service, you probably spent more time out of the country than you did in.
Yes.
And I know trade has not lessened in the significance for U.S. agriculture. Did your members talk about the current activity with regard to trade and trade relationships and what they would like to see from this administration?
The answer is yes, but I would say it was more informally. There's not a policy position because it's already in place. We've had a policy a long time that pursues market access and trade agreements. I'd break it down this way. There is a fair amount of disappointment that we're not getting on with what we've known as free trade agreements from the past. I know that I know this administration is changing that definition, which is just fine, but I think our members would all say we're just not seeing the market access actions that get us to what we would call as fair and equitable trade around the world. So I'd say that. Now, that said, programs like the Indo-China framework, there's value in those activities, even though they don't get at market access. There's not enough value. We'd love to see market access come with it. Let me be clear. But most of the work I was doing traipsing around the world was not doing free trade agreements, but just straightening out existing trade agreements, making sure that people are abiding by the World Trade Organization, or if it's a bilateral or a unilateral, that whatever the agreement was, that people are following the rules, because they were not. They most certainly were not. So there is a lot you can do to straighten out trade short of doing a full free trade agreement. But ultimately, when you get all that fixed, you're still on the outside looking in if you don't get new market access, because that means others are.
So, Ted McKinney, if you are back on the job in Washington and trade is your mission and statement, and you happen to be in Mexico and you happen to be sitting in front of President Obrador, what are the things that you would say regarding USMCA, what they agreed to, and the policy path that they are pursuing now?
Well, after I did the proper diplomatic greeting and smile and embrace, I would get to the question and said, where are you going to get your corn to feed your livestock and your people if this decree goes through? Because I can't figure out what the answer is. And I would hope that that might give pause to think, oh my goodness, my poultry industry, which has continued to grow and very robust. Same with pork. You can list this, you can list a lot of animals in that. If they go all the way, then all of a sudden they start to get short of corn because they can't look south. Corn is produced in a similar way with biotech techniques, south of them, just like it is north and well north of them. I am afraid Mr. AMLO's painted himself in a corner here. And I want to show the respect to let him find his way out of the corner, but oh my, his industry is deeply, deeply threatened if they go through with it. So in that sense, I just have to compliment Alexis Taylor, our former member and my successor at USDA. She's terrific. We love having her there. Same with Doug McCaleb at USTR. We couldn't be more pleased with the team. And we're glad that the administration is taking the USMCA rules to the limit and trying to enforce that. And I could say that for corn and the decree in Mexico, as I would say also toward dairy in Canada. Let's see if the rules work. My goodness, they have to. Who are we if we can't and don't enforce rules?
Well, Ted McKinney, it's a joy to have you on the program again. And I know, speaking on behalf of those who are involved in this industry, we continue to thank you for your service to agriculture and still being on the job now with NASDA. Thanks for being on this edition of Open Mic. Ted, it's Open Mic. You know what happens. You've got the last word today.
Well, I'll just say a quick thanks to my members. It is such a joy. It's one of the reasons I chose to come here, that we have people from all walks of life, all forms of agriculture, all states and commonwealths, all political stripes, and yet somehow we find a pretty doggone good way to come together and develop policy that I think advances agriculture. So I'm thrilled, and I'll just end with an enormous thanks to the members across the 50 states and four territories. Thank you, Jeff.
Our thanks to Ted McKinney, CEO of the National Association of State Departments of Agriculture, our guest this week on Open Mic. AgriPulse Open Mic is brought to you by NCIS, the National Crop Insurance Services. Crop insurance, the smartest, most efficient way to secure America's food, fiber, and fuel supply. For AgriPulse, I'm Jeff Nally.